It's my special pleasure to introduce our speaker tonight. It says on the sheet it's Kate from San Diego, but somebody told me it's Kate from Wales. So it's either Wales or San Diego, but it's still Kate. Come on up. Thank you.
That's true. Hello, I'm Kate. And I'm an alcoholic. And yeah, I'll tell you where I'm from. I live in San Diego, but I grew up in Wales. And you'll hear that in my story. I want to thank John for inviting me to speak tonight and participate in my own sobriety. I also want to say a big thank you to John and Kim, because I met them at the San Diego Roundup in line. And I remember talking away, and we had some mutual friends. And then John was like, "Oh yeah, I'm the speaker seeker for South Bay Pioneers." And I was like, and then next thing you know, a week or two later, "Hey, I got your number from so and so." I'm like, "No, surely there's an age for this, you know, a sobriety age." Anyway, my sobriety date is October 16th, 2016, which means I'm 8, which is absolutely amazing to me. And we know, when I think about my sobriety, I feel like my first 2 years in AA just was like a complete slow motion. I don't know what it is. And then like from like 2 to 8, it's just been like everything's at like high speed. But I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm really thankful that some of my good friends that I've known since really early sobriety, like Brent and Leo and Robin, and of course my partner Joe, who didn't really have a choice about coming. He was like, "Hey, you know, I'm gonna head down there around 6. You coming?" Coming. This is what I've learned: if you want someone to do something, you nod your head like that, right? Anyway, so first of all, congratulations, Travis, on your 90 days. That's fantastic. And also to the Joe for coming here and announcing that you were new. When I first came into AA, I sat in the back and I didn't say a word to anybody about being new. And like, when newcomers come up, and especially my home group is Common Solutions on Friday night, it's been my home group for over 8.5 years. And when newcomers come up to share, I'm always like blown away by it, because like I literally came into the rooms and I could not even speak. I could not look at anybody in the eye, and I was a shell of a person, and I felt completely worthless and I had nothing. So when I see newcomers come up and talk, it's really important for me to hear their story, right? Because I can really easily forget how it used to be. So thank you. Thank you. Anyway, so let me tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in Wales, which is right next to England. And I moved to the States when I was 13 years old, to the Boston area with my twin and my parents. And for my dad's job. And my parents were like, "Well, it's called New England, so it's kind of like England." And it was nothing like it. But I will tell you something. This was my thought, a couple things about moving at the tender age of 13, as being a girl at 13, coming to another country and feeling very self-conscious, right? Because I grew up feeling like I don't know what it was. I was just like very insecure growing up. I remember like I'd be in like sitting in my high school class, just like obsessed, like brushing my hair, like just always wondering if I was ever good enough. And I don't know where that came from. I really don't. And like, I notice it like as one of my big isms is always that like little bit of self-doubt, or I'm not never doing enough. And to this day, that is still one huge thing for me. And, you know, I've learned the tools through working the steps of AA. And also the love that we get from in these rooms from all our fellows that have really, really helped with that. So anyway, I went, I moved to the Boston area when I was 13, and then I went to school out in Western Mass, and it was really, really cold. And when I was, when I graduated, I moved out to San Diego. So I've been here quite a while. And I love San Diego, and I'm so grateful to live in our beautiful city. Oh, I did want to make one comment about this meeting. So I've been to this meeting once before, and I love it. And I like walking in and feeling the energy in this room. Like, it's just very, very welcoming. Everyone's really kind. And my favorite part of it is that cakes come out of the window. Like magic. And you know what? I've never been to a meeting that has cakes come out of the window. So I just had to say that. Anyway, back to the story. So I moved to the States, and it took me a while to really make some friends because I really didn't feel like I fit in. Luckily, I did have my sister with me, so that was really that obviously really helped. In high school, I say one of the first drinks, but you grew up in Britain. Like, I remember drinking shandies, which is like lager with lemonade in, like Sprite in it, as really little, because that's kind of what you do on Sundays. You go down to the pub with the whole family, like the grandparents and everyone. It's like one of those things. It's not we're going out to the bar to get completely shit-faced. We're like doing this family thing. So as far as I know, I am the only alcoholic in the family, but I'm sure that there's some that are not admitted alcoholics. But it wasn't really exposed to me at a young age what alcoholism was. So I would say my first drink I was have a sleepover with two of my girlfriends, and we stole. I stole. like three Sam Adams beers from my parents' fridge, right? Because we were in Boston, so there's Sam Adams, of course. And I remember, like, I opened them and, like, I grabbed it and downed it. And my friends were like, little sips. And they're like, oh. And I was like, oh. And I, like, downed them all. Like, why did I do that? And no one else did. Like, that was my, like, gut reaction, right? Anyway, so in high school, I was a weekend drinker. I always liked to party. I always liked to be the last one up. I didn't want to miss anything. I was very proud of how much alcohol I could consume. We'd go, like, sneak out into the woods and drink and smoke and all that wonderful stuff. I had a great time in high school. I really did. And then I went to college. I went to school at UMass in Amherst. And let me tell you why I went to that school, because you party there. And that's it. I got into some great schools. I did not go to those great schools. I went to the school where you could party the hardest. I purposely did not have classes on Friday because I knew that I'd heard that Thursday night was a party night. So, of course, I'm not going to have classes on Friday. So kind of like that during that time, like, I partied. I also worked really hard in school. I went to the business school there, and I did fine, probably like my first and second year. But then moving on to like my third and fourth year, like, the grades were starting to slip a little. I dabbled into hard drugs that I didn't think I would ever get into. And my drinking was, my drinking was progressively worse. But what was worse was honestly my behavior. I was with a guy that I'd been with since I was 17, and I was living with him, and I was cheating on him left and right. And it went completely against my moral compass, completely. And I remember I would call up my mom, hungover as hell, and just be like crying and cheated on him again, and just like all that, like, just feeling of like guilt and shame and self-worth. And I will tell you something, that feeling, that didn't leave until I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous 20 years later. And that's the kind of baggage, the emotional baggage and turmoil, that self-hate, that kind of bred that self-hate and disgust within myself that I couldn't even see when I was drinking. But that's what I brought in every single relationship going forward. So you wonder why they didn't last, right? They wonder why, like, this wasn't happening. And so I moved out here with him, and I started working in advertising, and that was a great job for me. I was in my early 20s. It was those industries where you work hard and you party hard. We would go out to Hamburger Mary's. I don't think it's called Hamburger Mary's anymore, because I was working right next to Fashion Valley Mall at the agency. And we would go out for lunch and never come back because we'd be taking shots at the bar. Like, I was like, you know where it says, like, I remember reading the Big Book for the first time with my sponsor, because, oh, I'll tell you that. I first read the Big Book, or tried to read the first page, right when I got sober, and I couldn't understand what the hell it was saying. And then when I sat down with my sponsor, it was like, oh, I get this now. Like, you know, I needed someone to like really read it with me anyway. But you know, when it was like, Bill was like, I have arrived. I was like, yes, I really identify with that. Because when I was, you know, when I first came to San Diego in my early 20s out of school, and I was like in this career that perfectly matched how I wanted to live my life. I wanted to party. I wanted to do what the hell I wanted to do. I would be living, I bought a place with somebody and lived with my boyfriend. Yeah, I went out and partied all the time with my girlfriends and cheated on him then. Like it was, my behavior was horrible. It was all about me, period, all about me. So obviously that relationship ended and I was, you know, I'd spent some time when I was 27, I kind of had this thing where I wasn't getting promoted fast enough, don't you know? And I was like, later, and I quit my job and I went and I traveled for a while and I went to Hawaii for like 6 months, right? Here's the thing, I didn't have any clue. I was just like, oh, I don't want to work for this anymore. I don't want to do this. But I had no direction in my life, none. And I also didn't have any tools in my life to just deal with myself, which was kind of causing a lot of chaos and just run on self-will completely. So I went and lived in Hawaii in an A-frame, and I did like meditation and yoga every day, except I couldn't meditate because I couldn't even sit still. And I cooked in this retreat place that I went to. And, you know, I look back on that and I realize like I was just trying to run away from myself. And I brought myself with me. And I caused some, you know, havoc there too, just with my behaviors. And I came back to San Diego and I went into like, for the first time, like, I'm pretty much known as being like very happy and like very positive. And like I look at things in like a very positive light, sometimes a little bit too positive, you know? And so I went into a deep depression when I was 27. And I stayed in bed for 3 months. Luckily, my parents still lived in the States. And I stayed in my parents' house for 3 months because I could not get out of bed. And I refused to take any medication for it, just refused. I was like, oh, no, I'm a hippie, don't you know? So I'm au naturel. Meanwhile, let me have a drink and a cigarette. So so I remember my sister was like, you know, if there's something that can help you, Kate, take it. And I remember like, and then I was like, it kind of was something like a light went off, right? Like they, you know, they talk about like a glimpse that someone says something. And a lot of those things have happened to me in sobriety. So I started going to see somebody. I started getting on antidepressants. And slowly but surely, I remember I was talking to my therapist. She's like, you need to get a job. Like go to the coffee shop and see if you can get a job. And I was really like, I'd been manager of an ad agency, managing an account manager. And I literally was like, I can't work a register. Like that's how deep down in my depression was. Right. And I know like if you've suffered from that or not, it was just, it's not being sad by any means. It's, I can't feel a damn thing about anything. I don't know. I remember thinking to myself, I don't know what's right or wrong. I truly didn't have any kind of sense of what right or wrong was, only from just logically from that, but not from learned, but not from that feeling. And so slowly, like I started working at a coffee shop, and that helped. And that helped slowly come out of this depressive state. And then I started drinking again. I met my husband. I met my husband, and he was divorced, and he had two children that came with him. And so this is kind of fast forwarding a little bit. And I went and I lived with him, his two kids, his buddy, who was also just divorced with a child too. And basically, I went in and Al-Anon the crap out of them because I was like all of a sudden Miss Mom and loving this role. And I went and I lived with these single guys and took care of their kids for them. And during that time, like, you know, we all really got along because they drank like me. Like, we would have a keg of Arrogant Bastard, like, on tap all the time, because that's what they like to drink. I'd have my Coors Light. But that was literally how we lived, and we partied, and we had a great time. And I was still working. I was, at this point, I would think I was doing some consulting, but, you know, I was managing just fine, managing, you know, the drinking, really enjoying partying. Could have those times when I'm not going into work hungover. I wasn't a person that would ever get up and start drinking at 6 a.m. because I'd be too hungover and I just wouldn't like it. And so I ended up marrying, obviously marrying my husband, and helping him raise his two kids. And then I got pregnant, and when I was pregnant, I did not drink. And that whole year of Oliver, my son, he's now almost 12. That whole first year when he was born, I did not drink. And, you know, here's the thing, and I talk about this a lot. So it was hard for me when I first came into the program, because I'd never been a day drinker, and that's not true, never been a morning drinker, but I'd had these periods where it was just like chunks of like just not drinking and having no problem not drinking whatsoever. But it's like talks about it in the big book, like the stages of alcoholism, right? That heavy drinker that with sufficient reason can stop. So I was kind of in that stage. It is clear to me from my drinking that when I crossed over a line in my drinking and did not have that power to stop, That's why I know I truly am an alcoholic, because if I have a drink, I won't be able to stop. I have zero control over that, zero control. And I truly know that. I truly, truly, honestly know that. And so I got his first year, around his first birthday, I got in a fight with my husband, and I remember feeling like such the victim and just like, oh my God, I was in so much victim mode. Woe is me. And my reaction was I went and I grabbed a beer and I downed it, because that's how I drink. I drink really, really fast, right? And that kind of started this 2 years of drinking to cope with a failing marriage that I absolutely refused to see. I did not want to see it. So what did I do? I drank it into denial and completely. And because that's my tool on how, at this point, how I knew how to cope with life, right? On life's terms. It's not that anymore by any means. Luckily, I have you and I have AA, where I'm shown, you know, we've got the 12 steps, we've got each other, we've got the fellowship. Like, this program and the people in it loved me until I could love myself. The 12 steps allowed me to understand myself and to love myself no matter what, with all my flaws, right? And I always love to say it, like, you know, and I say this to my son too, like, nobody's perfect. But I always thought I was supposed to be perfect for some reason. But no one is, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. And I do mess up, and I do say sorry. And it still really hurts me if I mess up, and I'm, you know, but it's not holding on to shame for years and years and years and just carrying that along. So for the next 2 years, my drinking got worse. My husband's was really bad. It was to the point where, like, I'd wake up in the morning and he'd be passed out outside, and he'd apparently woken up at 5 and started drinking. So I'm raising this child. None of us are working. I'm too scared to work because I'm really adamant, because I'm stubborn as hell, and I'm like, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. She raised me. I actually saved money for my job and socked it away for like 2 years so I could be a stay-at-home mom. But like, he wasn't working because of his alcoholism. Like, it was like literally a living nightmare. Like, I didn't know. And I was doing like little part-time gigs now and then. But I could not leave my son with him. And I remember I get really upset about this, but I remember I was working and I was doing some work at the Children's Museum for an art studio I was working for. And I remember getting a phone call and my husband slurring his words, and my baby screaming in the background. And I was downtown, and I just dropped everything and booked it down the street to get home, because I was like, oh my God, because I'd seen this, like, you know, someone that was blacked out most of the time, and my baby was with him. Mm-hmm. And I remember walking home, and like, he was like stumbling all over the place with my son in his arms, and my son is still screaming, and it was the worst nightmare that, like, ever. And, you know, when I think of things, and I'm like, well, when I first came into this program, I don't know how the hell my sponsor put up with me, but most of the time I would be obsessing about my husband's drinking. And it was like, girl, you need to get to Al-Anon so bad, because I did not want to see my drinking. I didn't want to see it at first. I wasn't the problem. It was him that was the problem, right? I really didn't want to see it. So I remember, like, you know, my son at this point is 2. I was completely shit-faced for his 2nd birthday. Like, I barely remember it. And one of my really close friends, she also had children around my son's age, and we would just hang out and drink, and she drank like me, and we would hang out and drink Coors Light, like, all day in her backyard. And I remember one time, like, I was driving, and it was, like, it was noon, and I all of a sudden had this overwhelming urge to drink, and it was like not controllable, and I had to pull over and take beers from her fridge. That had never happened to me before. That right there to me is like that crossover line where I no longer have that power to stop drinking. And there was also other things that were happening, things like, I would wake up, and the first thing I thought was planning out what booze I had. There was never booze in my house. I will tell you that right now. With 2 alcoholics living in a house, I always laughed, because we'd go over to our friend's house, and they'd have a huge wine refrigerator stocked. And I honestly could not comprehend how they had wine in it, because I had a tiny one, and there was never wine in it, because we always drank it. And oh, by the way, it was like $2, $2 chuck. Right? It wasn't this, like, because why? Because I drank it so fast, and I needed to have at least 2 a night. So like, still to this day, when I walk into people's homes and see wine fridges, I'm like, wow, that's amazing that there's wine in it. I am really an alcoholic. So, and the other thing was, yeah, my day was like revolving completely about when I'm going to get that next drink. Oh my God, am I going to run out at 1 o'clock in the morning when the liquor store closes? Am I going to have to get more? Like, and that the liquor was the priority. Like, I have my son, and I remember feeling like pushing him in a swing to go to sleep, and I was desperate for him to go to sleep so I could start drinking how I wanted to drink and start chain smoking by myself in my backyard, listening to, like, you know, like, musicals. It was such a great life. But here's the thing. During that time, I could not comprehend to myself that there was a life without booze, because since I was younger, like, all my friends, we partied. That's what we did. I mean, heck, I went to school in Boston. We all drink. Like, what else are you going to do? And, you know, I come out here, and then I attract the same kind of people. So we're all, like, I truly, for years, could not comprehend. Kate drinks beer. Kate loves beer. Like this is how I'm known, right? Kate's really good at flip cups. I want her on my team. So my identity was really, really, like, about beer and wine. And I used to make white wine spritzes, which is like white wine with sparkling water. And I used to just down those, but I'd have to water it down because I drank so fast, and I wanted to feel that effect, and I wanted to feel that buzz. And that confused me a lot when I first got into sobriety, because I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I drink just as much water as booze. But, you know, yeah, the things we tell ourselves, because why would we want to admit they were an alcoholic? But today I am truly grateful that I'm an alcoholic, because I love what the 12 steps have done for my life, and I love the life that I have today. So when my son, I always, you know, I think about my sobriety was in terms of like my kid's age, because it's pretty significant. And my son Oliver grew up in the rooms. He was 3 when I got sober, and my husband had gone. You know, I mean, the marriage was a completely done, deteriorated, and I just absolutely could not see it. No way. I did not see it until I was 2 years sober. That's how long it took me to come out of a denial spot. And my husband went missing, and he just texts me, and he's like, I've gone off in the wild, and I honestly thought he was dead. Like, I really thought he was dead, and he was missing for 3 days. And then during that time, I remember I woke up hungover, and I was just like a mess because I thought he was dead. And I called up my parents, who they've since moved back to Wales, but they lived in PB then. And I called up one of my really good friends who's not one of us, and I just kind of told him everything that was going on. And I was like, I can't live this life. I had this thought in my head that was like, you're not supposed to live this life. Like, this is not where you're supposed to be. And I got rid of everything that looked like booze in the house, right? Everything. This meant like wine glasses, my pint glasses from Wales, which were a treasured possession, right? All the way from the pubs. Like, bottle openers, decanters, everything. And there was no booze to get rid of ever, so that didn't matter. but I remember I put it in a box, and then I put it on like OfferUp or something, and I was like, free, and they were gone within like 5 minutes. But that's what I had to do, because I just knew that we needed help. And it was the first time when I'd really thought like, there's no way, and something has to be done. And I, you know, it was kind of like I'm in autopilot. And I remember I drove out to the Laguna Mountains with my friend, because I could track him on my cell phone, and like just remember like seeing a car crash and thinking, oh my God, that's him. And it was horrible. It was a really, really, and then, you know, I've got my 3-year-old at home with my parents. And eventually he showed up, and he detoxed at our house. And I didn't know anything about detoxing or any of this stuff. And a day later, we went to, I started looking up like programs or something for him, right? Not me, for him. So we went to a place in Hillcrest, and I went there and I sat with him, and they were talking about doing an outpatient program, because of course we can't do inpatient because we're all too busy and drinking, whatever. We had really no life. And I sat there, and then someone came in and said, hey, we're from Harmony's Women's Group. We do we have a women's program, you know, with childcare, blah, blah, blah. You know, is anyone interested? And my hand went up. And I was like, why is my hand going up? And I went, and they're like, okay, ma'am. So I went and I talked to them, and I was telling them stuff, and they're like, yeah, you're perfect. Yeah, you're perfect. And I'm like, what are they talking about? Don't you know I water down my wine and I only drink beer, light beer, even though it's like an 8 to 12 pack a night. So I went there. They told me after like 3 months, like, all right, Kate, you can graduate. And I was like, no. And I went to a wonderful place, and it was called Harmony's Women's Center. And since then, it's been taken over by McAllister, and it's up on Arrow Drive now. And I have gone back to speak there, and it's just, thank God for that place. And it was women, and we had kids, and our kids, you know, we took interns to look after the kids, and it was a Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 intensive outpatient program. And that kept me sober. What kept me sober was all the women in there and that fellowship that was there, and being held accountable because they tested RP. and that willingness to do something different. And then my husband went to, he went to a different place. Now, for me, they told me I had to go to recovery-based meetings, and at least three, and I had to get a sponsor. And at first, I was like, oh, I'll go to SMART because it doesn't have the God word in it. And then I was lazy and I was like, oh, well, there's way more AA meetings. I'll just go there. And I really didn't want to go at first. And it wasn't until like some of the women in the group were like, Kate, you got to go. You got to go. My first meeting that I went to was in on Mount Soledad at Old Town Speakers when it was up there. And I remember just a woman spoke and I just really identified with their story, like the having a child and like all that. You know, I'd driven drunk with a one-year-old in the car. You know, I just didn't get caught. And there was, you know, my first month or two into AA, I was having a hard time listening, I would say. Well, first of all, I couldn't sit still. I mean, I always had to get up and go to the bathroom and like wiggle and like, you know, I had no tools for myself because my tools had been booze, right? Numbing out myself with booze. And I remember a lot of the times I was hearing these men talk and I was just like, oh, no, I'm not identifying. And just really kind of anti-AA. Like, I feel like, you know, through a sobriety, don't get me wrong, I'm so grateful for AA and I just absolutely love it. But it wasn't always like that. And there have been times when I'm like, oh my God, AA. But that's always me. It's always me. You know, it's not, and I always know that too. Like working the steps, I know it's not AA that's the problem, it's me, right? Or my perception of things. And so I was told I had to get a sponsor and I fought that for a while because don't you know I know better than you counselors. And oh my God, what? They were like, not another one. Like, oh, newcomer, you know their attitude and knows better. So smart. So so eventually I got a sponsor and the way I got a sponsor is that I went up to the sponsorship rep at the time who happened to be Maureen, who I think spoke last week, which is, and I still remember that today because she was so loving and gentle, and she always is. And I asked for a sponsor, and they paired me with Lauren, who is just an amazing example of sobriety. Like, I think she had 14 years at the time, and I got a really strong sponsor that really helped lay my foundation in AA, and that was all God. I mean, I didn't go out and pick him because I was too scared to ask people or anything. And she sat down with me for that, you know, the first week. I remember we met at the living room, and which is close to where I live off El Cajon Boulevard. And I remember I was like, oh, can I get you a coffee? She's like, oh, no, there's no financial exchange. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you're spending your time with me for this hour, like, you know. But, like, I didn't truly understand, like, what it is to be, like, the sponsorship and how much. I now understand it now after, you know, with sponsoring the women that I have in my life and how much they have taught me more than, you know, I have ever taught them. Like, wow, my sponsees teach me way more than I could have even imagined. And we sat down and we started reading the big book. And then the big book started making sense to me. And I really started to identify with Bill's story. And what I really identified was not that he was a man in, you know, the 1930s at all, but really like his perception of things. Like, you know, I have arrived and like his like, I have a really high drive to succeed. And I've always been that way. And I really started to identify and understand. And then we started reading more about, you know, what alcoholism is. And I understood it. And I was like, and then we got to that part where they're like, and we switched to organic wines. I was like, yes, I did that. like, and there were so many things that I identified in it that it was very clear to me that I was an alcoholic. And that's how, you know, that's how I got to really truly feel that first step was by sitting down with another woman, a sponsor, and understanding and her helping explain to me, like, I am completely powerless. I have no choice over it. And here's the other thing. I also know this from our lovely sister program that I am also powerless over other people. But for a long time, I really thought I could control other people, which is hilarious. like, truly could not grasp that concept. So it took me a little less than 2 years to really to do the steps. I procrastinated on my fourth, and I hate writing. I procrastinated on that. But here's the thing. When I was doing my fourth step over 6 months, she told me this, like, things will come up. And lots of things over those 6 months came up. And then, you know, for years later, things would come up. I jot them in my notebook, like a memory. And during writing that fourth step, things started to really change for me because I started to change. Because it was the first time in my life where anyone had said to me, what is your part? Like, here's the other thing too. I was also a rageaholic because I didn't know how to deal with my emotions. So I would compact everything and not talk about it. I mean, I grew up in Britain, like, we're pretty reserved. Like, there's no talking about our feelings here. And so, everything got very, like, I would bottle it in. I would bottle that anger in. And guess what? 2 months later, I'd be exploding on the people I love. I'd be exploding on my partners. I'd be exploding on my husband. And it ruined relationships completely. And, you know, and I saw my part in that. And I always wanted to blame them. Like, that's why we broke up. But the truth of the matter is that I sucked. I was untreated alcoholism. I only care about myself. And so I went. So I started working the steps with my sponsor, and doing the fourth step, and then I did the fifth step with her. And I remember I went to a friend's like 40th birthday party, and my buddy was bartending, and I sat and I was yapping to him the whole night with my water in my hand. And I remember leaving and driving home, and I go, oh my God, I did not once think of alcohol. And I'm like, oh my God, the fifth step works. Like, you know, and they're like, you know, you got to do your fourth step. But that kind of blew my mind, because early sobriety, for a good year or so, I'd always be obsessing with, I'd go places, like maybe I'm going to a neighbor's house or socializing, obsessing with how many are they drinking, who's drinking, what's drinking. Like really, like there is that obsession with alcohol, not just me, but like other people. What are they doing? What are they drinking? And I actually still find it fascinating to watch normies. I absolutely cannot relate whatsoever. A sip. And then hours later, there it is, sitting there, three quarters of the way full. I cannot comprehend that. I could not finish a drink or other people's drinks. I mean, that's I'm an alcoholic. That's what it is. Like, it's very clear to me. I also want to tell you something else. My twin is not an alcoholic, right? And at all. And she cannot comprehend Alcoholics Anonymous whatsoever. I really barely talked to her about it. And my parents don't get it either. But like, literally my sister will have a sip of beer and be like, oh, like she does this purposely when she comes to visit the States. Oh, this American beer tastes like piss. And like, we'll just put it down and won't drink it. And a sip, and there's a full beer. What a waste. And I'm like, I absolutely cannot get that. And she cannot understand in her head when I tell her about my drinking. And are you sure you're an alcoholic? You know, they don't know that. They didn't see it, because I would go home and I remember I would go for dinner at my parents' house, and they have, you know, a glass of wine with every meal. And I would not drink it, because I knew that as soon as that wine hit my lips, I couldn't control it. And I had a child, and I had to put on safe face and make sure my parents weren't like, oh my God, you've had too much to drink. Because I wanted to go home and drink how I wanted to drink. And I couldn't do that around them. So they were like alcoholics, and no, your husband's an alcoholic. Anyway, so... I worked the steps, and then I got around to doing my ninth step, and I did one of my most powerful ninth step was the one with my dad. And you know, my dad, he's British, like we're pretty reserved, but I did it, and we were driving somewhere, and we were in the car for like 45 minutes together, and that's when I kind of did my ninth step and talked to him about it. And he started really opening up about his childhood and his relationship with his mom. And you know what I realized? I realized, oh my God, and I didn't realize it before, my dad really does have unconditional love for me. And I felt like my whole life I'd been told what to do and judged and not good enough. But really the truth of was that was not it. And that changed my relationship with men completely. And the next couple of days and stuff, I had a really huge awakening, and I came out of denial from my marriage. And I realized, and this was and it was heartbreaking, quite frankly, but I realized that this person had not wanted to be, my husband had not wanted to be with me for years, and I refused to see it. And here's the thing, he was so, his program never told him to go to, never really told him to go to meetings or anything. So he never got into AA and rejected AA because he was too good. So for the next, you know, I'm on this spiritual journey through AA. My sponsor got me into service work right away and told me to get a home group. Common Solutions is my home group and still is today. And I've always had I've had a service commitment ever since I got, since she told me you got to get a service commitment. And I'll tell you something, that when I got service commitments, I really started to feel part of AA because I was going to the business meetings and I was getting to know people better. And that changed my perception of AA, and it really got me to truly love AA because I was being a part of it, truly being in a part of it. And, you know, I've had lots of different service commissions on positions in the group level, you know, in a group and on committees. And it's awesome. And honestly, luckily for me, my first couple years in AA, I wasn't really working full-time. I was raising my son. And he grew up in the rooms of AA. Like, he knows all the prayers. He comes in, stacks chairs. Like, if you ever see him, I mean, you'll see him stacking chairs. You know, from what I know about AA, there's three things, and it's in this circle and triangle, which I love this symbol so much. I look for everywhere. The circle and triangle. But, you know, I know that it's the service work, it's the fellowship, and also doing the 12 steps. And I like to live right in the middle of that circle and triangle. And I hope I stay in that circle and triangle, because otherwise I don't think I could stay sober with just one of those things. And so I had the spiritual awakening, and fast forward about 6 months later, and with counseling and a lot of Al-Anon and working the Al-Anon steps, I really woke up, and I admitted that I was like, wow. Like, and I remember I was talking to my husband, and I practiced, like, what was crazy about it was that powerlessness over people and the powerlessness we have over, like, our addictions. And really understanding how I have no power and I can't control how this person feels about me. And there was absolutely no spiritual connection. There was no physical, and there was no connection whatsoever left in my marriage. And I was in a very loveless marriage. And the only reason I knew that was because of all the love that I felt from everybody in the rooms. That's how I knew I was missing it. And I remember feeling like I would go into my house and feel like, all I could say, I was like, I went up to my husband. I was like, I feel like dark here. Like, that's the only way. And I remember going into meetings and feeling like white light. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. Like, that really full energy. And then going home and feeling this darkness. And I was like, why do you not want to be with me? He's like, oh, I have resentments against you. I was like, about what? And he couldn't even tell me because he was that far into his disease where he couldn't even see it. And I knew that why would I want to be in a marriage where someone else doesn't love me the way that I deserve to be loved and just rejects and pushes and belittles and everything else? And even though I loved this person, I loved myself more because that's how AA did for me. That's what the steps did for me. They showed me who I was. They showed me that I could accept myself. And as a result, that's how I can view and deal with life on life's terms, but also give the same back to other people that I meet, regardless of if they're AA or not. I accept you for who you are. I I have no judgments if this is how you want to live your life. How am I? Don't know. I'm not God. I don't know if that's right or wrong. And you know, that's what AA taught me. When I have that acceptance of other people and myself, that comes from acceptance of myself, I live a peaceful life. I live those promises, and I live serenity too. And the only way that I was able to do that was because I'm an alcoholic, and that's why I'm really, really, really grateful. So I'll just wrap it up. So I was divorced. Well, I separated in 2019, and then COVID hit. And I left my house because I couldn't get him out. And I completely rebuilt my life completely. I started a new career. I don't know how the heck I did it, but you know, and there was a lot of fear. And during that time, I relied heavily on prayer and meditation because there were some times when I was just in a lot of grief. And there were some times where I couldn't even move because I was just in so much grief. Because it wasn't necessarily leaving that person, it was that I'd planned my whole life ahead of me. I'd planned it. Like, I'm married, I got a great job, I got a kid, like, this is it. And all of that was gone. And it was, that is where that time when I was so deep in prayer and meditation, and I'd listen to guided meditations too, because my head was spinning so much, but it was at that place where I met my higher power. Because that was, it's either God or nothing, quite frankly. And here's the other thing I want to say. My God is group of drunks. My God is good, orderly direction. And when I'm praying every morning, because I do my prayer and meditation, I do my gratitude list to a lot of the women in my life, and I meditate, and I've been meditating now for probably consistently every morning for about 5 years, and that has changed my life. And here's my thing in my business too. My clients are like, "Wow, you're so peaceful with this chaos going around." But it's all because of AA. It's all because of all the tools and the benefits that I got from AA. And we got a divorce. He's, you know, I've been through relapses with him. He seems to be sober now, or his version of sober. But you know, he's a great dad. We have a great co-parent relationship. I have an amazing partner, Joe. And who's an amazing stepdad to Oliver, thank you. And a great example of what AA can do in your life. My son is brought up with tools. My son is brought up with, you're angry at that child, you're angry at your teacher, let's do a fourth step on it. Well, how great is it that I have that tool to share with him? He's been meditating with me for 8 years, like to go to sleep. We listen to the same meditation. And like, you know, he sees his mom in the morning if he wakes up on the couch sitting and praying and meditating. Like, he's got these tools because he'll probably need them. But but that's good because I didn't have them. I was taught to stuff. So, you know, this year I went to the International Convention in Vancouver, and it was unbelievable to be in a city that was just walking around with happy, joyous, and free alcoholics. Just you'd walk down the street and you'd shake your hands. Where are you from? Where are you from? And everyone's like super happy. And that was such a magical experience to have, you know, have all these people from all these alcoholics from around the world come together, and just the energy there and just the joy and the freedom. And like, it happens every 5 years. If anyone has the opportunity to go, I'd really recommend it. But anyway, thanks for letting me share. And great, great meeting you have here. And the cake out of the window. Cake out of the window.
Kate from San Diego or Wales, that was fantastic. Thank you very much. Kate, one more, please come back and speak again. One more time for Kate. Thank you to the Women's Auxiliary and the Men of the House for a great dinner tonight. Happy birthday, Ray and Patty and Margie. Thank you for sharing your birthdays with us. Woo! Let's circle up.
hand all weird.
Yeah, I got you. What is the matter with you?
I'm sorry.